Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
Hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to my podcast, CPA Review and More. For those who watch every week, you hear the same thing, CPA Review. Are we going to be talking about CPA Review? No. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. Today, we'll concentrate on the More subject. I like to bring in different topics because, you know, you talk about accounting, CPA, all right? That, to me, is the cure for insomnia sometimes, and we don't want to put you to sleep here. And by the way, I want to thank the Atlanta area for being number one in watching, you know, the podcast. Thank you. And before I start, I just want to mention, which I always do, my wife has Parkinson's, and I try to raise money for the Parkinson's Foundation. It's the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Michael J. Fox, once again, he was in the movies Back to the Future. He got Parkinson's at a very young age, late 20s. So I ask you, please go to the Michael J. Fox Foundation website and contribute anything, you know, a dollar, five, whatever you can, all right? Because they are finding medicines, all right? And they're not going to have a cure for, they wanted to have a cure for Parkinson's within like the last 5 years, and they're still doing research, but they're making a lot of strides and they're coming out with medications too, which is helpful. So anyway, please take care of that. I'd really appreciate it. And without any further ado, whatever that means, we're going to talk about our guest. We won't talk about him. He's right here. We're going to talk with our guest. Our guest today is Joe Woodard. And Joe is, you might hear a slight accent. He's from Georgia. Luckily, you know, I grew up in the New York area. We don't have accents. Okay. All right. For example, everyone in the world calls this coffee. Well, I don't know how to pronounce that. It's called coffee. All right. Just remember, New Yorkers know how to speak English. No one else. All right. Anyway, Joe is, I'm going to read your little biography here, Joe, if I may. He's an author, consultant, business coach, and he's a national speaker, and he has trained over 125,000 accountants and business professionals in areas of practice development. All right. Now, he's also does strategic consulting, all right, and also how to maximize the use of accounting software in their practices. And I have to mention this. He is one of the top 100 influential people within the accounting profession, all right? And that's as per Accounting Today. And I must say this, after being in the accounting profession for 45 years, no one has asked me to join anything. I mean, I'm quite, and I, you know, and I actually, Joe, I asked Jackie, I said, can you get me nominated? All right. Do they have anything like top 100 for people under 70 or something? All right. All right. How did you get that? Did someone, was that a grassroots effort? How did you get that?
I didn't try to solicit nominations or anything like that. I was actually surprised by it. I woke up one morning and everybody kept saying, congratulations. And I was like, for what? And I found out, because I had not seen the issue yet, that this was back in 2012, that they had just found me, discovered that I was having an impact out there in Place Miller. So it was 100% organic and 100% their research. And I guess that made it mean more. Funny thing is, that was actually 2011, sorry. And in 2012, I believe it was, they didn't. And then from 13 and on, or whatever that break point was, there's like 1 year there where for whatever reason, I didn't make the cut, which shows you I'm probably in that top 100. I'm probably like number 98 or 99, not number one or number two. because I must be right on the edge if I ever fell off the edge. But I've been honored to hold that designation now for the better part of a decade.
And what does it come with? A trophy, a trip? What is it?
No, it just comes with an inclusion in their issue of the month. So But and once I got my face on the cover, but you know, the if you get on the cover, I guess you have to be.
Is this the picture I'm looking at now? Is that the one that went on the cover?
I don't know. Well, it might have been, because that was about 10 years ago.
10 years. And I said to you how young you still look.
Yeah, long guy. Yeah, look at my headshot. I look really young. It's amazing how it works.
Is that on your passport? Looks excellent. Very good. And by the way, if you can get me into that top 100 most influential, you know.
I'd be happy to nominate you, my friend.
Okay. Do I have to do a grassroots, you know, get people take a position on something?
No, no, they okay. They do send you a whole questionnaire, and it does influence their decisions. So I'll see if I can get you into the application.
I don't want to push Joe. Then someone will say, you know, you push someone, they didn't really want you.
It's just an application. I don't make the decision, right?
Just look for a gift certificate to any restaurant you would like of your choice. Okay. All right. Today, by the way, Joe gives many, many seminars on various areas. And I, you know, his assistant, Jackie, gave me a whole list, which are very interesting areas. And we felt what we're going to do is we'll start off. I want to talk about some of these areas that he runs webinars on. Now, this one we're going to talk about is the battling of the staffing crisis. As we all know, all right, since the pandemic, I guess, or was it since or after the pandemic, all right, all of a sudden, all right, it was hard to get people to work, all right? They were leaving their jobs, and they said, I'm not putting up with any more of that stuff, all right? I'm just going to go and love life. And, you know, I had heard that there was, now, I don't know how they did this, but during the pandemic, people saved like $3.5 trillion, all right? You heard that, didn't you?
I've heard a number similar to that, yes.
They just decided they don't have to put up with any of this stuff. So, you know, and companies are having trouble getting people. So when you discuss battling of the staffing crisis, Joe, what are you speaking about?
Well, I'm speaking about that impact. But here's the thing, Phil, as you know, we've been struggling with a staffing crisis before COVID ever hit as an industry, the CPA industry and the bookkeeping professions, those two. So COVID exasperated an existing problem with us. It created a problem called the mass resignation with others. By the way, there's some great articles to come out just within the last couple of weeks here as we're recording in March 2022, within the last couple of weeks about the mass regret. So I would encourage you to go read those. Some of them have been published in Forbes. One of them was in Inc., I believe. But now people are starting to regret what they did during the pandemic. But obviously there was a psychology as well. We were all wrapped up in it. The government was taking care of us for a minute there, and it caused everybody to kind of have a jump start psychologically. Do I really want to get back on the hamster wheel that I was on? And in that, people were telegraphing what they're really looking for, Phil, is they're looking for purpose. They are not looking for primarily provision. In the hierarchy of needs, once your clothing is met, your food is met, your shelter is met, your primary concern ceases to be money, though greed masks that, makes us think it is. The actual hierarchy of need, not want, turns to purpose. And those companies that were providing purpose to their employees did not suffer a staffing crisis. Now, you may agree or disagree with a lot of the policies of Chick-fil-A. I disagreed with some of their policies several years ago that they've had to correct. But as a culture, they didn't have, because of their culture, they did not have the staffing crisis that some of the other fast food chains are experiencing. Yet they're in the same category with a lot of the same pay rates. Because
and I'm
culture,
sorry, why did they not have the staffing crisis?
Because their culture was infused with purpose. Their culture was infused with employee-first behaviors. It's a delight to work at Chick-fil-A, and everybody who works for Chick-fil-A understands that the reason they're there goes beyond frying a piece of chicken and handing it to somebody who's hungry. Disney did not have a staffing crisis, though Disney is notorious for paying minimum wage to a majority of their Florida and California workers.
Right.
They did not have a staffing crisis because their culture is so powerful, and because people know that whenever you're at Disney, you're there to create happiness. That's their purpose statement. And they hire to that. They manage to that so that it goes beyond flipping the hamburgers or even putting on the Mickey Mouse suit. You're there to create happiness. So what I would say is, first, I want to kind of break down what's causing it overall, right? COVID is an exasperator, but when we're talking, this is a CPA podcast, so I'm assuming most of your people there are accountants or bookkeepers. If you are, a lot of this stuff pertains to you, especially so. But in accounting and bookkeeping, one of the factors here is an increased technical learning curve, where to know your debits and your credits and to know how to make judgment calls on GAAP is not the primary trade skill anymore. The primary trade skill is how to deploy automation technology to maximize the use of that automation technology, how to standardize processes across multiple cloud-based systems, how to get them talking to each other without something called data collisions. It's become a technology play with accounting and bookkeeping in it, rather than a bookkeeping and accounting play driven by technology. Because of that, it's harder and harder to find people who have the marriage of those two skill sets, the marriage of those two mentalities. And creating more problem there is their college graduate deficit. People are not, the Gen X's especially, the millennials started with it, they are not going into accountancy as a degree because they cannot see a connection between accountancy and changing the world. Everybody in the millennial and the Gen X wants to change the world. We all want to change the world. It gets back to purpose. They especially believe that the reason that they work is to change the world, to have a positive impact on their world at the very least. We've done a bad job, Phil, making the connection between what we do as a profession in guarding small business, in guarding enterprise business, in protecting business journeys, entrepreneurial journeys, in protecting innovation through compliance and record keeping and insights and visibility. If we did a better job telling the millennials and the Gen X's that you change the world by protecting the journey of the world changers, we would have more accounting graduates, but we haven't told that story. And because of that, we don't have the recruitment pool coming out of the colleges that we used to. And for those graduates that are coming out, or for those candidates that are available in the space, more so than ever, Phil, they're getting gobbled up by the enterprise level firms, because the enterprise level firms, especially if you're a bookkeeper listening in here today, are leaning into client accounting services to a higher degree than ever in the history of the profession. And they are hungry for really qualified professional bookkeepers. But tax is exploding as well. And SALT, state and local taxes, after Wayfair versus, the Wayfair ruling with SCOTUS,
yes,
after that happened, that's exploding. So all of these highly qualified people are getting scooped up by the enterprise level firms. And in that process, the labor pools are shorter for us to draw from. But it's not just the big top 200 firms that are recruiting. The general ledger solutions are recruiting, and the scaled gig economy. So take Intuit, for example. Intuit did not employ tax practitioners and bookkeepers 10 years ago. And then along comes TurboTax Live, and all of a sudden they're an employer of tax preparers. Then comes QuickBooks Live, which is bookkeeping services, and now they're an employer of bookkeepers. So you've got Intuit, the makers of QuickBooks, thinning down the hiring pool, competing for that workforce. And this is not as known, but very quietly, H&R Block, publicly, but quietly at the same time, H&R Block has hired 7,000 bookkeepers, 7,000, Phil, in the last 2 years, to place those bookkeepers at brick and mortar locations to offer bookkeeping services. Smart move on their part. They're paying rent year round, and the signs shut down for what, 9 months out of the year? Now they get to use that brick and mortar lease throughout the year. Smart move. But that means they're hiring the same people that a lot of the accounting firms are trying to hire, especially in their cash departments. Then this gig economy thing overall is exploding. H&R Block is gig, QuickBooks Live is gig, but gig as a general category is exploding, which is creating a worker shortage across the board. I mean, try being a taxi company hiring right now in the world of Uber. But the world of Uber has now moved to all sorts of other industries who, like the taxi company, can't hire because people are making more money with more flexibility, having their own businesses under gig models. As that continues to expand, the traditional hiring models are going to diminish. more people feel are getting into business for themselves. The entrepreneurial, the great resignation was offset to some degree by the entrepreneurial explosion. People figured I'm at home already. There are gig economies that will help me hedge the bet while I start my own dream. It's easier these days than ever to incorporate. It's easier these days than ever to manage your own books. It's easier than ever to go out with Shopify and sell your product line without having to have an inventory show for. Let's go innovate. Let's go start our own business. Whether they succeed or fail, either way, they're not in the worker pool right now. And then the boomers. The boomers have moved their way through generation by generation by generation, having their impact as they've gone. Right now, they're the retirement generation, which means the bubble there has come with them and they're diminishing. That creates a massive retirement fall off. All of these things combined, some of which have been exacerbated by COVID, have caused us to have a really hard time finding workers.
The problem, first of all, my audience is mostly people studying for the CPA exam or people who are certified. And they want to know different areas to go into. But this is the problem we're having in the profession. There's a shortage of people taking the exam. All right. Over the past 10 years, they've had a 50% decline in the number of people taking the exam. And, you know, I am part that I'm part of a group called Approved Course Providers of the ASCPA. And we used to go to meetings once a year in New York City, and then another place for the second meeting. Well, we haven't had those live meetings. They've been all Zoom meetings, but they always used to ask the ASCPA, the examination division, and some of the people other than the examination who come into these meetings say, why are we having a shortage? All right. I mean, they act like, what's the problem here? And I'm very critical of, I've been a member of the ASCPA since 1973. And I really, interestingly enough, I didn't want to be a CPA or an accountant. All right. Because I used to look at accountants as people who are dull and boring. In fact, I did, first of all, two things. I did my doctoral dissertation on why people are not going into accounting because they have an image problem, okay? All right. And interestingly enough, I sent that into the Journal of Accountancy, and they read it. They said, we don't have an image problem, all right? And I'm thinking to myself, where are they? You know, and then they started placing ads like on CNN saying, yes, you want to, if you need someone who's an expert, all right, contact your CPA, you know. So they're telling me we don't have an image problem, all right, but more so, people are not going into public accounting, and this is why, all right, or they're not going into accounting, all right, first of all, they work you to death during tax season, okay? All right. Secondly, we have to go an extra year. This 150-hour rule is a 5-year. We have to go 5 years to take the CPA exam, all right? And people are going and saying, you know, I can major in finance. I can go to IT. And I can start with a higher salary for only 4 years of education, okay? So I don't know if you're familiar with, they decided that they're going to start the CPA, the accounting evolution. Have you heard about that at all?
I'm not.
All right. The evolution is this. We're going to take now the CPA and we're going to give specializations.
Oh, yes. So, that. Yeah, I didn't know by terminology, but yes, I know about the specialization strategy.
And everyone says, oh, that's terrific. That's going to get more people in. All right. But if you read carefully, and this is my opinion, if you read carefully, what the ASCPA is trying to do is this, all right? They're saying, oh, you can be a specializing in tax, financial accounting, whatever, IT. But here is the problem, all right? To get the license, the experience requirement has not changed, okay? And what's the experience requirement? Usually it's working 1 or 2 years at a CPA firm, all right, or working under a CPA for a year. And the bottom line is people don't want to go into public accounting. So they haven't solved that problem, okay? They used to be more liberal on the experience requirements. You can work in accounting for a year. You can work for a governmental agency. So they're making the experience requirement very difficult. And I don't know why they don't know that most people don't want to work in public accounting. It's so tiring. The work hours are ridiculous. So this thing is going into effect January 1st of 2024. They're changing the exam again. All right. So here it is. They have a problem here getting people, all right, to take the exam. And what are they doing? They're changing the rules all over again. Okay. But not taking into account what's really the main problem. This is my opinion. What's the main problem? Hey, make the experience requirement a little more liberal. All right. Hey, this is a business. The CPA, the ASCPA, it's a business. All right. All right. And they think it's, you know, it's more than just a business. All right. If you're a CPA, you're a special person. All right. And we're going to make it difficult because that CPA stands out. People think it's the best thing you could have. So they are working on that. Now,
but can I address that for a second, though? Because yeah, if ahead, we're dealing with a staffing crisis, one way to mitigate that, and I agree with you that they need more CPAs in the workforce, and they and I think they're going to learn a lot through this 2024 launch about the best way to reposition the brand and the nature of the CPA profession. It's a radical shift. I didn't know it by that term, but yes, I was actually at AICPA Engage. Whenever they were talking about the specifics of it and the shift that they're taking, it's going to be very technological in a lot of the ways. I think it's a really good outcome. I also think it won't solve the problem of enough people who are credentialed. I agree with you there. We got to solve that problem. But here's the cool thing, Phil. When it comes to the staffing crisis, if you're a CPA listening in here, if you're the CPA, your people don't have to be. Get enrolled agents. Enrolled agents are highly trained, highly skilled, credentialed, and certified in tax preparation and are authorized to provide tax representation services. Go to the EA pool, right? If you have a CAS department, you don't want CPAs in your CAS department anyway. Get highly qualified bookkeepers. Buy up bookkeeping practices, right? And you can solve the staffing crisis even if you don't have a bunch of CPAs in your practice. And if you're non-CPA, even more so, just hire a bunch of enrolled agents. You don't have to hire a CPA to launch a tax practice, bookkeepers. Just get a really good enrolled agent.
Isn't that more or less saying, if the ASCPA says that enrolled agents get power professionals to do some of the accounting work, all right? Aren't they really saying, hey, we're not handling this problem of not enough CPAs, all right? We're sort of helping the group that says you don't need CPAs.
Maybe that's where the world's going, right? Maybe the world is going to, when I go to the dentist office, there's only one person who's a DDS there. Everybody else is a dental hygienist, right? Maybe we don't need, I'm just throwing it out there. I want more CPAs, make no mistake. Maybe we can get along just fine with fewer CPAs by having fewer per firm and having a lot of specialists. Take the medical approach. You know, they're all doctors aren't equal. All medical practitioners aren't equal. All nurses aren't equal. You have nurse practitioners and you have LPNs and everything in between. Let's create gradations of expertise. And there are already some gradations of certification between EA and CPA. What we lack in this country, Phil, let me tell you what would solve a big, big chunk of this problem. If the AICPA formally, or an organization with their kind of level of authority, formally offered a certified bookkeeper designation. Intuit does one. The AIPB does one. Everybody has these private ones. There's nothing like what the CPAs and enrolled agents have in terms of authorization and credibility. That happens in Australia. You can't even be a public bookkeeper without being certified. Why don't we have that in the U.S.? And now there's, with all of these layers of credentialing, just like in the medical community, we can fill these hospitals up, AKA these CPA practices. We can fill them up with highly qualified credentialed workers, but there's no designation.
You know, most of the big firms, the big four, used to be big six, big eight, big eight. Like, I'm talking PricewaterhouseCoopers, anyway, they used to have, make all their money from audits, certified audits. The main source of revenue now that's being brought in to these big firms is advisory services.
Right.
And, people want to do that because that is so, so broad an area, all right, that, hey, if you don't want to sit there all day and add things up, like I remember I worked in New York at Seidman and Seidman. It used to be called Seidman and Seidman. And there was the partner in the office was Bill Seidman. He used to be on CNBC. I would see him, Anyway, that I like talking to people. And I get the idea you like the same thing because you stand in front of people and talk. I find that more enjoyable, telling them things that I know, sharing. But now people want to go into consulting and advisory services. All right. So it's not even the fact that people like to do audits anymore. It is. KPMG published their profits. All right. They had a tremendous growth in profits in consulting. Mm-hmm. Right. So, but they got to go out. The SCPA's got to go out and sell this. All right. There's no one to go out and sell it. Secondly, all right, you have a lot of new courses if you're getting into, teaching IT, consulting. All right. They don't have the professors who are trained. All right. That's another problem. They're starting this thing a year from next January. Mm-hmm. All right. And I don't even know where. All right. I mean, some of these things, digital analytics and all that. None of these professors really.
Not at the collegiate level. No, they're going to have to slow bake that, I think. Now, there are other areas, though, of major universities they can draw from. And I don't know what the strategy is there with higher education. But I do know that the talent exists typically within the university structure. It's just not placed in the accounting department. And maybe I don't know what the plan is. They're working with those universities in order to cross-pollinate some of that knowledge. But what I can tell you is there are private sector pools from which to draw. I'm one of them. I've built a 300-hour school of advisory across six disciplines. It takes 3 years to go through it at a very brisk pace, measurable but brisk. And you can start billing advisory services when you're halfway through the first course. So the private sector is making it the gap.
What do the courses teach?
All right, so the six disciplines are technology. Each one of these are 10-week courses. Each course is 50 hours of study, which is reading, classroom, and videos, client-facing exercises, practice exercises. So all that is wrapped up in the 50 hours a quarter, but or 50 hours per 10 weeks. But you've got technology advisory is one of the disciplines. Of course, financial advisory, which is your financial analytics, predictive analytics, cash flow projection, and so forth. Okay, so you got financial technology, that's two. Succession, which is different than valuation. I think there'll always be a place for the valuation designation within CPA. That's a different level. All right, that's talking about a forensic valuation. Our course uses special software to determine the fair market value based off several different factors: operational, systems, process, intellectual capital, financial, asset management, as well as liquid assets. It takes all of those pieces and it comes up with a Zillow rating on what your practice would sell for in the current market. But it also comes up with a strategy. Excuse me, a strategy on how to increase that fair market valuation. So what do we need to do with your processes? What do we need to do with your intellectual capital? What do we need to do with your ratios, your financial ratios, in order to make this valuation go up over what period of time? So that's called succession advisory. Then there's knowledge advisory. Sounds like a really, really weird one, right? But major corporations are now starting to deploy something called the CKO, the Chief Knowledge Officer. And it's the person that curates all of the company's knowledge, gets it out of the brains of its people, out of disparate systems that aren't contextualized. It turns information into contextual knowledge that once that knowledge is applied, it makes the business wiser. So a knowledge management system, if your listeners want to get the better grasp of this, a knowledge management system that we use a lot and we recommend in the course is called Bloomfire. And if you understand what Bloomfire does as a software product, you will understand the scope and nature of what the knowledge advisor is trying to accomplish. So far we have technology, succession, financial, knowledge, and the fifth discipline of advisory is operational. So if I am, think of this, you know, sort of fractional CFO, fractional CTO. Well, this would be like a fractional COO, but you're not running the client's business. What you're doing is you're coaching or advising the client on how to run their business better. I mean, that's what the operational advisor does. And then the last discipline is management advisory. We almost called it leadership advisory because it does encompass both. But management advisory hit more to the value proposition. What does it take to measure people, to measure teams, and to measure their performances in a way that motivates them, inspires them to accomplish their best? But obviously, that's inseparable from leadership. Management measures people. Leadership develops people. We teach both in that course. So those are your six disciplines.
Do you have, I'm just curious, smaller universities who don't have the budget to hire people? I mean, big universities, they can hire people who know different types of, technological areas like digital analytics, that type of thing. In fact, Wiley is writing a whole new book on that, okay? John Wiley. So they're gonna keep up. But what about the smaller schools? Do you go to universities who are smaller universities and sell them this program?
That's on our roadmap to try to get this credentialed so it can be, we can offer college credit for it. But right now we're treating it as professional education, not institutional education. It's for people with or without a college degree that are already in the profession that want to enhance their ability to coach businesses, not just record keep or do compliance on businesses. So,
but who are you going at? Who are you trying to go to get college credit for this?
Well, right now we're just working through what the requirements are in order to become credentialed. And then we're going to begin to approach the university system. But we are going to approach, to answer your question specifically, when we're at that point, we're going to approach the 4-year credentialed universities. We're not going to approach trade schools or community colleges with this program, because we think that the most likely candidates to offer it are those with finance and accounting degrees or MBAs. MBAs need this because they learn the science of business management through their MBA, but they don't learn the application as well. That's just the nature of higher education. But what we built here, Phil, is powerful, but it's not the only program like it.
Right.
I would encourage your listeners to go find those programs that exist outside the university system and to deploy and to use those to develop essentially advisory trade skills over the top of what credentials you have. Or we have a lot of non-credentialed bookkeepers. Get this now. A lot of non-credentialed bookkeepers who are embracing this model and who are now billing thousands of dollars per month per client. Whereas before they couldn't break past the commodity barriers of their bookkeeping trade. So you don't even have to have fancy letters after your name to do the work. You just have to know how to do the work.
When you graduated, what was your major in college? I'm just curious. What did you major in college?
That's a funny story. My major in college, and it kind of drives my point home. My major in college was classical Greek. You know, Aristophanes, Plato, Euripides, you know, those guys, Sophocles. Yeah, reading all of that in the original Greek is still an art form that I could enjoy if I actually did it. So no, I did not study accounting. My bachelor's degree is in that. I have a minor in music, that helps. So what I'm driving my point home here. Now I do have some graduate studies in accounting. All right. If not, I couldn't talk shop. I do not have a degree in accounting. I am the walking type case for why anybody with the right skill sets and the right field applications can be an agent of business transformation without the fancy letters. No MBA, no CPA, no EA. I have BA, but in the wrong discipline. But yet, Phil, I went into the big green egg, you know, the grill people, mm-hmm. And I overhauled their entire operational systems. Elf on the Shelf. Anybody here that's listening that has kids or grandkids under the age of 10, you probably have an Elf on the Shelf every Christmas. I overhauled their operational systems.
Have you heard of the one for the Jewish people? You know,
no.
The competitor to that? This is true. This guy got on Shark Tank, and he got them to invest in a product called, Mensch on a Bench. Do you know what a Mensch is?
Is that a real thing? Are you kidding? It's
yes,
great.
If you know what a Mensch is.
Do you, oh, yeah, of course. Term? Yeah.
Yeah. So he's got big account with Bed Bath and Beyond.
Okay.
And, yeah,
so Mensch on a Bench. That is fantastic.
That's the, yeah, it was. He has made, I'll tell you, I know he, all right, Robert Hershevik I've been to that set. I've met them and it was very interesting. Barbara Corcoran, the whole works. But Robert Hershevik, he invested in that. And I don't know how much they're doing a year. Interesting thing is the gentleman who actually started that company, he is Jewish. And his wife is Catholic.
Hmm.
So
that's fantastic. What that's so encouraging to hear that. But my point to the listeners here are, you know, advisory is not even something that requires necessarily CPA or MBA. So if there's a worker shortage coming out of the universities, my encouragement to your listeners is don't sit around and wait for that problem to be fixed. Fix the problem at the ground level. Find a really good school of advisory. We just happen to have one too, but go find one, train your people in the skill sets and get them out into the field. Because even non-credential, even at the beginner level, they will bill 2, 3, 4, 5 times what they can bill for a tax return or for a bookkeeping engagement. Because unlike those two professions or those two skill sets, coaching is not a commodity. And something can be extremely valuable, Phil, and still be commodity priced. I'm not trying to say that tax and bookkeeping are not important. They're actually holding the world together. But they just happen to be available at the level of supply that drives them into commodity price.
Yeah. I've had a lot of very good guests over the 2.5 years who, some of them they're CPAs, but they've gone into advisory services. All types. They have a very good computer background also, and they are doing so much better than if they just worked in public accounting doing auditing. And I mean, I remember when I first started, it's interesting, when I first started this thing, someone came in and said, well, I want to talk about cloud accounting. So I said, what's cloud accounting? I never heard of cloud. I said, you know, I'm visualizing looking up in the sky. And I said, is cloud accounting only work if the sky is clear? So I actually have learned so much about, you know, cloud accounting. You know, I'm not going to go into it in any way, but I think the thing with these podcasts, you get to meet people and you hear their views on various things and like, you know, battling the staffing crisis. That's very helpful to discuss. It really is. I just want to mention something because we could stay on here for, and I know you probably would want to stay with me for at least another 5 hours, but I don't want to ruin. You say no?
No, I was like, yeah, I thought you were going to go a different direction with questions, so I changed to yes. Yes, I'd love to stick around.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I appreciate it. By the way, I must mention something about Intuit. Okay. Intuit bought the company that I used to do. I had a tax practice for several years. The software was called Lacerte.
Yes, right? Yes. That's the very first software product I ever used when I was a tax preparer.
Intuit has bought Lacerte.
Yes.
Okay. when Lacert was first in business, and all right, their support team were all people who were accountants, all right, who had some idea of taxes. They knew taxes, all right. Now the problem is they're not doing that anymore. Intuit has hired people, and I'm finding most of them, and nothing against people in South Virginia or West Virginia, all right, but the biggest problem is, you know, with any software is, how do you get this item? You know, it's got to go over to schedule Z, all right, but you don't know, what do you press to get it over there? And the people I talk to at Intuit, Lacert, they do not have, they don't, you know, they might have a high school degree, all right, and they never went to any schooling for accounting or tax. So I said to this guy, because I was on the phone with him for a good hour trying to figure out where something went, and because I still do about 6 or 7 tax returns. My daughter has a preschool and 3 of them. But the point is, all right, I'm finding the people that Lacert is now getting because of Intuit taking them over, it's not good. It's not good. And these people work out of their home, and they're in very areas that the economy is not good. They're in Southern Virginia. Okay. And I mean, they're nice people, but it's, you know, there's an example to me, I guess Lacert is getting away with it. People are still using them. All right. But very disappointed in Lacert. All right. And if Mr. Lacert, you're listening to this, please send me a stipend every month. I could change my mind. But anyway, no, this is what's going on. You know, the one area I really would have wanted to talk about, we mentioned it had to do with, why don't you do this? Tell them about the seminar you do once a year, if you would.
Absolutely. And I know we're short on time, so I'm just going to rattle these off really fast. A couple pulls where people can solve the stipend crisis, and then let's talk about my conference. You want to check out the online recruitment sites. Just understand you're going to get a couple hundred resumes, and about 3 or 4 of them are going to be good. It's a filter process out there. Recruitment agencies are expensive, but boy, are they good if you pick a good one. So just if you have the money and you want to get somebody good fast and reduce the employee turnover, then, you know, spend it on that. It's worth it. LinkedIn is a great place to go recruit people. People don't think about it that way. You can actually filter for people in your area who are credentialed with certain credentials who are looking for work. And a lot of those things are free. Job fairs are good, but job fairs work best if you're hiring non-credentialed people at community colleges and trade schools who've studied maybe bookkeeping or just gotten a tax preparation kind of designation. They are not as strong, or they are good for the colleges, but remember there, you're competing against people with a lot more money than you and a lot more benefits than you if you're a small practitioner. Don't rule out professional associations. Great place to go find people. Just keep in mind they're networked with the same people you're networked with. So now your employee knows all of your peers and all of your other network system. So just, you know, it could be a disgruntled employee problem down in the future if that happens with you a lot, but that could be mitigated with a positive culture too. And remember that there is a website, a directory for people who are certified on particular products. If you're wanting to lead out with a Xero certification or a QuickBooks certification, those credentialed people are discoverable through their websites. And a lot of times they're hireable through those same websites. And then former employees of clients, I can't stress former enough, of course, but if you've worked with them before and you know that they're good and they've already left your client's place of business, maybe for a year or more, and you can go hunt them down on LinkedIn, that's great people to go recruit after they've already left your client's place of business, because you know their work ethic and you know their work demeanor and you know their skill set. They're pre-vetted. Now, let's talk about that conference coming up. I've got a conference that happens every June. It's going to be in Orlando this year at the Orlando World Center Marriott's, the largest Marriott in the world. We bought out all of their exhibit space and all of their meeting space to let you know this is one of the largest shows of its kind in the world. And we're going to feature over 100 different general ledger and small business fintech solutions, small business being the key word. So they're not, you're not going to go there and see things that the enterprise companies would use. They're probably a good fit for most of your listeners' clients here, Phil. And we have 75 unique breakout sessions taught over 4 days. So love for your listeners to join us in Orlando this June. They can learn more. My last name, Woodard.com.
How do they get information? Is there a phone number if they wanted to?
Absolutely. You know. Just go to Woodard.com. They can chat us there, call us from there, or info@Woodard.com. Now, if you do Woodward.com, I don't know where that goes, but Woodard with one W, it'll go straight to us. Info@Woodard.com, W-O-O-D-A-R-D. Website by the same name. You can chat us there or learn more out there too.
Joe, thank you very much. I wish we had more time. Maybe we'll do this again sometime.
I would love to,
Phil. Sounds like you're always away. Are you ever? Yeah, how
I do travel quite a bit. Now that the COVID thing is paring down, I'm getting back on the airplanes a bit, you know, going here, going there. But anytime I'm in town and anytime you'd like to talk, I would love to be back on the show.
You ever get to the Washington, D.C. area?
Not as often, but it is on our short list. My daughter's 14 and she wants to see Washington, D.C. for the first time. So we do look to be heading up there in the next couple of years.
Well, I'm about 20 minutes away from there, actually. Love to.
Well, we'll look you up.
You come there and I will take you to dinner. I promise. I've done that before. All right.
That's awesome. And
just because you're just a nice gentleman and excellent picture.
It's great talking with you.
Anyway, yeah, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much. And thank Jackie. She's good. She's a good person to have.
Yeah, Jackie's a great team player.
Yeah, she really is. You're very lucky.
Yeah.
And anyway, once again, I would recommend you look into that that meeting. In fact, I know that hotel. It's a beautiful hotel. You know, I guess people that have business and pleasure.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's got one of the largest, it's got an aquatic center if you want to bring the kids, and it's right across the street from Disney World. Also, if you want to bring the family with. So it's a great location.
Sounds good. Well, once again, I want to thank Joe Woodard. I almost said Woodward. I'm sorry. Joe Woodard for being on this podcast. And once again, you know, you can reach me. I give you my phone number. Write it down. It's area code 301-874-4900, extension 5. I'll repeat that. 301-874-4900, extension 5. If there's any area you want me to find someone to talk about, we will do our best to do that. All right. I want you to learn all about the different areas as an accountant, as a CPA, you can go into. And I'll tell you this. All right. There's a shortage in accounting. I'm hoping it comes back. I think it will come back. First of all, being a CPA, even though I didn't want to be a CPA, I am glad that I eventually did. And I can say this, and I usually ask my guests who have taken the CPA exam, did this change your life? And they said, most definitely, all right? They are doing well as a result of getting a CPA. And don't think of a CPA as just being a bookkeeper. You're not just a bookkeeper, all right? You're a professional advisor, all right? Remember that, all right? You're one of the trusted advisors. You're not like a used car salesman. Now, I'm not saying used car salesmen are bad people because used cars have gone way up in value, right? All right. But anyway, no, seriously, look at us being a CPA. All right. You can major in finance. Go ahead. But I can tell you that people who major in finance, if we have a real downturn in the economy, all right, they are the first ones to go from these companies. All right. CPAs are basically recession proof and they're always needed. So just remember that before, you know, yes, maybe you get a higher salary now in finance, but you know what? In the long term, and you can look this up on Google, in the long term, after you're in accounting, CPA for more than 5 years, you will far exceed what a person in finance might be making. Anyway, all right, that's my little pitch for the CPA. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for sharing this podcast with me. I always enjoy giving you information and I enjoy meeting very nice guests like Joe Woodard. All right. And Joe, take care, stay well, and good luck with that meeting. Okay.
Thank you, Phil. It was great to be here.
Thank you, Joe. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you again. Please watch next Tuesday, a new show. All right. And we're getting a lot of good mail from everyone. Thank you for that. See you soon. Take care. Stay well. And please be nice to people. All right. People are not nice. I thought they'd be nicer after this pandemic. All right. They're still as grumpy as ever. Be nice to the person next to you. Okay. Take care, everyone. And we'll see you soon.